of the Swiss shortwave merry-go-round.
Name is hearty welcome here aboard the merry-go-round. You're truly Bob Common. And next to me, as usual, Bob Zanotti. And
we're getting closer to Christmas. Maybe.
Well, Bob, that certainly brings back a lot of memories to me. And I know it certainly does to you as well. This is January 2004 when we are recording this. So let's open the program the way we used to.
Hello, friends. A hearty welcome aboard. This is Bob Tommen, and next to me, or across from me, an old friend.
Bob Zanotti. And there it is. We did that, Bob, how many times? I remember very well the first time we got together. I think we were doing that program from April 1970
right.
to the final program in June 1994. It's already 10 years since we're off the air, Bob.
That's right. And I remember the date in the 70. You were working in Montreal with a radio station there. You came to Switzerland, and you took the release from David Simmons. He went back to England again. And since then, we were keeping our audience busy with the merry-go-round.
Yeah, David Simmons was my predecessor on what was the Swiss shortwave merry-go-round. That's not what it was always called. But I think the old program, when did it get started? 1957, Bob, originally?
In 57, I started, yes, with Russell Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was an Australian, I think.
He was an Australian, yes.
Yeah.
And after, you remember, it was a special event. I had a contact with a Hungarian station which was looking for medicine for a young girl who suffered from leukemia. And in 57, that was the big event in Hungary, the revolution and what have you. And, well, fortunately, we had the representative from the Red Cross at Budapest at that time. And they were advised by the headquarters in Geneva to have a look at this girl's place. And so the whole story began.
We have to stop and say that this is an amateur radio story. You and I are both radio hams, for those who don't know. You're HB9GX, HB9 being the Swiss prefix, HB9 Gulf X-ray, mm-hmm. and I'm Hotel Bravo 9 Alpha Sierra Quebec, ASQ. And you were a ham, we're going back now to this story, where you were on the air with a Hungarian ham who appealed for assistance to help this girl.
Absolutely pure a chance. I was twiddling on the 20-meter band when I heard this Hungarian station calling CQ Switzerland or CQHB, which is the call sign from Switzerland, CQHB, and I came in and say, okay, what's your problem? And I say, I have an urgent message. I need medicine and medical aid for a young girl which is in the peril of death. The whole
and
thing started.
You were able to arrange this. You got in contact with the Red Cross, I believe.
No, I rang up the Red Cross in Geneva. Said, look, I just picked up a message here from Hungary. And they took a note. And obviously, they sent a telegram down to their mission they had in Budapest. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing came into the press. And it was, I don't know, the heydays or what have you there. The press, the papers were full of that. You see that thing there? Even in the
time. Oh, yeah, a picture from the newspaper.
From a newspaper. Mm-hmm. And
a much younger Bob Tommen in front of a lot of much younger amateur radio equipment.
Isn't it funny, Bob, the way we age?
Is that a DX100 there?
That was a DX100. You wouldn't even look at these things anymore, Bob.
Oh, Bob, I still have a Hammerland HQ100 at home. They don't make them like that anymore. But, Bob, before we get carried away on amateur radio, and we'll certainly be back to amateur radio very, very soon, we want to continue this update now. And so, basically, the people at what was called at the time the Swiss Shortwave Service, later to become the General and Overseas Service of the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation, or SBC for short, which eventually and finally was called Swiss Radio International, SRI, they heard about this.
Wasn't it funny, Bob, that at that era, most of the shortwave stations started to add international, and then eventually I remember the meeting we had in Madrid. Then we had the, what was it called? The Gang of Four.
The DX meeting there, DX Council.
Yeah, then we had Radio Canada, we had Radio Sweden, we had Radio Netherlands and Swiss Radio International clinging together, some sort of a joint or combined group of four.
Yeah, but going back now to this story of the contact you had with the Hungarian ham, that got in the press, it got in the papers at the time. The people at the radio heard about this. And, of course, DXing, which is, and we have to explain all of this, because on the Internet, Bob, which is primarily where this is going to be heard, and people may never have heard of shortwave, let alone DXing, they heard about this, and they wanted to start a DX program, which was very fashionable at the time, because international broadcasting was done exclusively on shortwave. There was no other way to do it. And you've been asked over the years many times about the origin of the term DX. What is your best guess, Bob?
That's one of those $64,000 questions, Bob.
Today it'll be $64 million with inflation.
I think it originates actually from the telegraphy side. When a radio amateur was calling CQ, he had the choice in picking anything which came, which answered him, local, continental, European, but then also he wanted to distinguish and say, I'm calling CQ, but only for stations being far away.
Mm-hmm. So CQ is a general call, and some people think it comes from the English words seek, S-E-E-K,
U-Y-O-U.
I am seeking you, whoever you are, abbreviated in telegraphy as the letter C and the letter Q, CQ.
So when you heard this as a ham, somebody calling CQ, you could possibly kick on your transmitter and give him an answer. But if he added CQDX, you knew exactly, oh, wait a moment, he's looking for far distance stations.
D standing for distance.
Distance stations.
And X for, I guess, unknown.
Your guess is just as good as mine, Bob.
Yeah, but if you're in my backyard or a couple of hundred miles away, don't call me. We prefer someone from the other side of the world.
Well, the same question could apply for the terms ham. Where does the term ham comes from?
Well, I have my pet view. I've seen this discussed also on QRZ.com. Where does it come from? And I've heard all kinds of ideas. But, you know, being basically from the New York area, of course, so the show business and Broadway is close at hand. And we all know that actors, amateur actors, are referred to or sometimes even called themselves hams. Oh, you're hamming it up. You're a ham actor. You're laying it on too thick. And I often thought that that's where the radio amateur term for, you know, ham came from. Well, you're not really a professional broadcaster. You're an amateur at this. And personally, that's my version. There are others, you know, other versions. Bob, listen, before we get any further, let's do something that we've done so many times before.
Shall we moisten our throats?
Cheers.
Cheers, Bob.
The English say cheers and beers. When you and I get together, it's cheers and wines. This is an old tradition, and let us remember to your health, Bob.
You remember the days we spent in
the caravan? We were in Europe here, remember?
In the caravan?
Oh, yes.
In the glider camp?
Yes.
This was always opened up with a good bottle of wine.
Bob, that's another story. yes. We have to talk about your passion as a glider pilot. Yeah. And in fact, I'm going to make a note. I don't want to forget this. Glider. Gliders. But first, let's go back and chronologically end that chapter about the old show.
It was called the DX Corner.
The DX program.
DX program. And I remember when I started in 57 with Russell Henderson, it normally consisted of sort of a name spelling, you see.
Yeah. Hat tips to writers and the listeners.
Welcome to Johnny X there in
Bob, South there
Africa.
Are some stations still doing it around the world.
And I don't know, it seems that the listeners were just happy enough hearing their voice being spelled out over Radio XYZ.
And it was exciting, of course, to have this friendship, this camaraderie with people on the other side of the world. Also, let's take that key word, friendship, on air. I'm writing this down because I don't want to forget it. Let's hear how that old program sounded years ago.
You are listening to the shortwave service of the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation.
Well, it's over to Bob Tolman, and we're over to Bob Tolman here again at his home in a suburb of Bern, Switzerland.
Well,
those memories there, Bob. Huh?
Just for the record, it was in 63.
1963
was Bern at Lehman.
Mm-hmm. And how the sound of radio has changed over the years. That was definitely what people today would call 1950s radio. Still a lot of good in it, though, Bob. But, you know, the strong, fruity-voiced announcers, so correct. And now on the Swiss shortwave service, it's time again for...
But, Bob, it wasn't so much the hi-fi which counted there. It was the fascination.
No, this was off the air. You could hear the fading, and you could hear the what we call selective fading, the distortion as it goes through the ionosphere. That was the sound of shortwave.
What counted was actually the originality to be able to listen to voices and music coming across thousands of miles.
And there was no internet. Let's remember, there was no internet. So the communication was by shortwave, signals coming, bouncing off the ionosphere and coming back to Earth. That was the only way. There were no satellites at this time.
It was particularly the amateurs and the shortwave listeners which were intrigued or kindled by this this physical fact that the shortwave should travel around the Earth, being bounced back from the ionosphere 2-3 times, and thus creating all sorts of phenomena such like fading and things like that. You see, it was actually the technicalities behind a shortwave listening which attracted the people, and many of us. I mean, you know as well as I do, Bob. We were stuck and kindled by the fascination of the technicalities, which later on became our profession in a way.
And also a plug or a little advertisement for amateur radio still today. Despite the internet, despite satellites, despite cheap telephone communication, people like you and I and millions, literally millions of hams around the world are still fascinated by what's called HF, high frequency transmission. In other words, short wave. This is for us the thrill. There is no way, you know, if someone has not experienced the thrill of HF communication or RF, in other words, radio frequency communication at all, they might not understand why we get so excited. But let me put it in my perspective. I mean, thinking as a kid, my grandfather was an avid shortwave listener, an SWL, in the 1930s and 40s. He used to work for the railroad in the New York area. New York, Susquehanna, and Western. How many people remember the old Susie Q, the Susquehanna Railroad? Still exists, still runs through my native town, my hometown of Hawthorne, New Jersey. And he was a fireman, you know, in the days when they had coal and they would have to fire the engine to keep it up, to keep the steam up. Well, he would go down to the end of the line. I think, where was that? River Edge or something like this, way down near the Hudson River, just on the New Jersey side. And across there was Lower Manhattan, downtown Manhattan, Canal Street area, where Ground Zero is today. That was considered, that was called Radio Row. That's where all the big radio stores were. And then in the 30s and 40s, whenever he could, he would take the ferry across the river. and go around and look at the bargains, what was new, and bring home radios. And my grandmother was always complaining he was bringing home all this garbage and junk. Well, he was the one who got me involved in radio. And I did the classic thing. I'm sure you as a kid did the same thing. You have a few years on me, Bob, but still the procedure for getting bitten by this bug was pretty much the same. You got introduced somehow by somebody or by coincidence into the magic of hearing radio stations coming from the other side of the world on shortwave. And then you get bitten by this bug. And still today, with the internet that we're using right now, with satellites, with cheap international telephone calls, for me personally, Bob, there is no thrill in the world like taking the transceiver, which is a box, which is a transmitter and a receiver combined in there, taking it somewhere, throwing up a wire in a tree, putting an antenna tuner to get your antenna working right, and call CQ, 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 and see who comes back. There is no thrill like that in the world for all the telephones and satellites and internets in the world.
Yeah, that's right, Bob. And, I mean, my own experience started during school with a few friends get together. I think somebody brought a schematic or an article.
A diagram of a circuit, yeah. Yeah.
On a crystal detector. So,
the old crystal set.
The old crystal set.
I had one once. It only picked up WABC, 50 kilowatts, a couple of miles away.
You remember this little thing in a little glass tubing where...
It was really a crystal.
With a, was a fine silver, what was it, some sort of silver...
Cat's whisker, they used to call it.
Yeah, yeah. And the point you had to, from time to time, you had to knock it flat and to make a good, solid point of it there.
Yeah, that was one version,
Then you had to look on that crystal, the best possible reception crystal detector. And, of course, those were the days. That was
basically, it was a primitive diode, wasn't it, that picked up anything.
But I mean, the main thing, perhaps from those days, I always advocated that the most important things in radio is a good antenna.
Bob, is still true today.
Still true today. And then came, of course, on the crystal set, we could get the locals, we could get the Europeans during the war. I remember having listened to the German the transmitters there in Budapest every night at 10 o'clock when we had Lily Marlene signing off for the day, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Those are little the milestones which are still here. And when you mentioned before Voice of America, okay, then we had the tubed receiver, 1V1 and things like that. And I still remember, the good old grave voice, Music USA, this is Phyllis Conover.
Yeah. I used to do a good imitation of him. From Washington, D.C., Willis Conover with jazz. And this is the way he used to...
Music USA.
He died a few years ago. But he had a tremendous following. During the Cold War, apparently people risked a lot to listen to him. And he was even a celebrity. I mean, people in the United States didn't even know who he was. But you mentioned Willis Conover's coming to town in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
People flocked, and jazz was in.
Yeah, I don't want to do any personality spilling here, but at SRI...
I know you were going to talk about Lance Shannon.
We had Lance Shannon, of course.
It was Willis Conover's protege.
That's right.
And, Lance would be turning in his grave if he heard this. But
enjoy.
Forgive us, Lance. But it was obvious to everyone that he very much was a fan of Willis Conover.
Yeah, and his, what do you call it in French, his violon d'angle was of jazz, of course.
Yeah.
He was the big...
His hobby horse,
Lance Channing, yeah. And, those were the days, actually. And then, of course, with these programs, this is something which I might just as well add, it was much more sort of a family programming.
Gets back to this friendship, hands across the sea sort of thing. It was a fraternity. It was a family atmosphere, the shortwave broadcasting.
Very much so. I was 5 years at sea, as you know. And when I
arrived, you were a ship's operator, radio operator. Yeah, you were a Sparks.
Yeah, I was Sparks. Yep. When I arrived in Fremantle, in Perth, automatically you start to meet people over there. And I had I remember a girl. She came on board and said, "Swiss ship." And do you know Russell Henderson? I said, "Well, I'm sure he was." Russell Henderson became my best man when I married, by the way.
Yeah, he was the Australian. Yeah.
He was the Australian. Yeah. Very, yeah. And he had, being an Australian, he had very close links, of course, was Western, was the entirety of Australia at those days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was family broadcasting. And I think,
and shortwave was a major link to Down Under. They had very little of anything else. Shortwave was the... That was the link to the outside world for them.
Yeah, and the other way around, we were keenly listening to the Kookaburra cry in the morning, listening to ABC.
Radio Australia.
Radio Australia.
And this is why the shortwave age was so important. This is why there was the DX corner. That is why the two Bobs came up on the scene.
But before that, Bob... I had the program called the DX Merry-Go-Round with the two girls. It was a 40-minute program. And I was lucky enough, having given the job as an editor and producer at the same time, was Heidi Schweitzer and Pamela Arnold, Bob and the two girls. And we had a lot of fun, of course. And then after that came... David Simmons, and he changed the tenor of the program.
Yeah, he made it more upbeat, as we say, modernized it a bit, slicker. He introduced some music selections. He was a disc jockey at heart, and you could hear it. He was never a ham, but he did have an appreciation for shortwave radio. I don't know what happened to him. We did have contact over the years afterwards, but not for a long time now. He's probably still around somewhere.
You haven't mentioned, Bob, that we are not sitting in a studio properly, in a commercial studio.
This is your ham shack. We call it a shack. I mean, I'm not being disparaging or insulting, or it's not an affront. We call it a shack. The Radio Shack. And I have spent many, many hours here over the years. We have done many recordings outside, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But we've also been here a number of times. There was one program I remember in particular, Christmas of many, many years ago. You were playing the electric organ. The electronic organ.
Oh,
and I played the accordion, because I learned the accordion as a kid.
The two Bobs in concert. I can go on the ham bands today, and it happens occasionally that somebody said, "Wait a moment, I recognize that voice. Aren't you one of those Bobs?" This is now, after 10 years, we've stopped. And obviously we still seem to be in evidence in one way or another. Bob.
Well, Bob, to tell you the truth, this has happened to me a number of times over the years. In fact, most recently, just a couple of days ago, literally, I called CQ on the 20-meter band, and a ham came by, or gave me a call from the UK. "I know who you are." And that sounded rather ominous, and he said, "You're one of the two Bobs. You're Bob Zanotti." And I said, "Yes, I am." And it turned out that he had been a listener for many, many years. And there's that friendship again, Bob. The DX program, or the merry-go-round, or the Two Bobs program, I can tell you, I don't believe it's a state secret, and I don't think anyone cares at this point, that certainly in the later years, the Two Bobs program, the Swiss Shortwave merry-go-round, accounted for a very large amount of the mail coming in to SRI. And there was a protest when the announcement came that we'd go off the air, and... Well, it wasn't enough to really stop it happening. But now I guess we have to come a little bit into the present, or recent present, if we want to put it that way. and look at the, I don't like to use the word, I think of C.G. Jung, the Swiss psychologist who said, or talked about the collective conscience or collective consciousness, or it's what some propagandists have said, if you say something often enough, it becomes a fact, even though it's not true. But the word I hesitate to use, but will use, is the demise of shortwave broadcasting. This is a very touchy point for you and for me. We, I guess you could say, we preached about it on the air a great deal. We never pulled any punches. We always said what we thought. And you know fully well, Bob, until the end, when we were taken off the air, when the program was ended, we fought for the retention of shortwave as a medium. People don't appreciate shortwave until there's a crisis, whether it's a war or a natural disaster or whatever. What's a relay station up there, Bob?
Yeah, okay.
What are you tuned to?
Well, the UHF.
Oh, local repeater here on VHF or UHF. People don't appreciate shortwave radio as a broadcast medium until things go bad. Then all of a sudden, you see pictures in a war zone of people with shortwave radios to their ears. They're not listening to the internet. We're using the internet here. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But there's one thing that shortwave has got is mobility and security. If somebody doesn't like what we're doing, someone pulls the plug. Literally pulls the plug on us.
Yeah.
We're off the air. But you can't do that on shortwave. And shortwave is literally the only medium that we have that will guarantee that security. When the going gets rough, when security is down, shortwave, HF, is the only way you can get a signal around the world. And I think it is, speaking in general, highly short-sighted to curtail shortwave services today. Too much faith is being put into the internet. Okay, it's wonderful. FM quality, MP3 quality. Anyone listening to us right now is listening to us in hi-fi, no QRM, in other words, interference, no selective fading, no distortion. Fine. But somewhere along that chain is a guy who can push a button or pull a plug, and we're gone.
And the reason was, as always, it's money. Every station claimed that they had no funds, no more money to keep up the shortwave services.
The big problem that happened to international shortwave broadcasting, when the Berlin Wall came down, the reason for most of the shortwave broadcasting ceased to exist, or at least they thought it did. Many people thought it did. Up until that time, it was an institution, a global institution that basically ran itself. What is your purpose? And of course, you'd get the same platitudes from every country in Europe, for example, or not outside Europe. We want to show that we are not part of this bipolarized world. We want to show our culture. We want to promote our values and show our independence and objectivity in this world, who we are in this state of polarization in the world. Sounded great. And it was true. It was true. But then the Berlin Wall came down, and so did the whole house fell apart. And then the managements of stations all over the world, not one or any specific station, the management started getting uncomfortable questions from the people who funded them, governments, institutions, saying, what are you going to do now? And so many of them, if not most of them, had no answer.
You remember that when it came to debating the future of radio shortwave broadcasting, we were told, well, the science of today, technology, shows into satellite transmission, into internet transmission, and I argued and said, well, how are you supposed to take an internet station on the beach when you are on vacation in Spain or in Portugal?
It's still a question today, Bob. Mobility.
Yeah, well, you can get now with a handy, you can get into the internet and listen to a program. But eventually,
sure, on the beach, right?
On the beach,
yeah.
But you will eventually also get an invoice at the end of the month.
Yeah,
if you want to
afford.
Listen to a full program,
yeah.
You see.
Yeah, yeah.
So we didn't believe in that argument, but so it was.
And you know, you're going to throw a satellite dish in your suitcase or put it in your back pocket and take it on a hike in the mountains or on the beach or when you're packing a suitcase for an international trip. What are you going to do? Throw the PC in the suitcase and sit and listen to, you know, and satellite too. You're in a hotel room. You have no exposure to the satellite. You're blacked out. You can't hear a thing. You know, I don't have it in front of me, but in fact, I'm sure today, if anyone goes to the laboratory of Thomas Edison in West Orange, New Jersey, on the wall is a saying, which I have to paraphrase because I don't remember it verbatim anymore, but the sense is the same, by Sir Joshua Reynolds. That was, you know, Thomas Edison's favorite saying. It was everywhere in his office there. There is no length or no means to which a man will not resort to avoid the true labor of thinking. We spend collectively as people, whatever the subject, propagandists, political spokespeople, you name it, they lose sleep. They spend so much energy thinking up all kinds of cock and bull stories, excuses, alibis for what, you know, for doing or not doing something, instead of just facing the truth, which is the easiest thing to do. If we look back, Bob, on the last 10 years, 15 years, certainly, certainly 15 years, time flies, 15 years of international broadcasting as an entity, we've all heard the patent recipes for the future. Rebroadcasting, getting your message onto local stations elsewhere in other countries. Then it was satellites were going to save us. The internet was going to save us. And in the end, none of these media has really proved to be the answer to the problem. Which brings us fully up to date. I was in Culpsville, Pennsylvania, at the famous shortwave DXer get-together in Culpsville, north of Philadelphia, a couple of times, but last year, 2003. There was a very impressive exhibition there and demonstration of digital shortwave transmission, Bob. And this was very, very impressive indeed. Imagine all the things that people say technically are wrong with shortwave. No distortion, crystal clear, but using HF, shortwave, as the means of transmission. Now, I talked to a couple of the people there with the Dutch, the English, who were behind it and promoting it a great deal. The Voice of America is involved testing it. The Merlin, which is the outfit running the BBC World Service transmitters. The Deutsche Welle, I believe, is involved. Radio France International, the Dutch, Radio Netherlands. They're all involved. And I said to them, this is wonderful, but I wonder if it isn't too late. I certainly hope not. What we have always said, what we've always preached over the years, Bob, is not one medium, this one or that one. We have always advocated a range of media to do a specific job. We are using the internet right now to reach people all over the world. It is a modern form of international broadcasting, reaching out. Absolutely legitimate. Satellites have their purpose, their application. Legitimate. Telephones. But as we speak here today, at the beginning of the year 2004, there is still no analogous replacement for HF broadcasting in terms of reaching people, the simplicity, the cost effectiveness. You mentioned cost before. I don't believe that it's a question of cost. If people really think about the simplicity and the cost effectiveness of reaching people on shortwave. They come up with a completely different impression. These receivers are available in the millions, Bob. They are affordable. They are easy to use. They are simple. They are there. They're in the hands of people. And all over the world, you don't have to invest in technology. You don't have to be in a highly developed, rich country. You can be anywhere. It's portable. You can put it in your back pocket. You can throw it in a suitcase, and it works. There is literally and simply no replacement for that simple, effective technology as we speak.
Bob, I think it would be very appropriate now to mention a subject which we were discussing high and low at the time, and which even was a recommendation by Geneva, ITU.
International Telecommunication Union.
Exactly. To put broadcasting on single sideband.
Which is a type of modulation coming from the traditional AM mode, but used by radio amateurs since the 1930s, and commercial point-to-point services.
Well, AM, the normal ancient modulation AM.
That's not what it really stands for. It stands for amplitude modulation.
Amplitude modulation automatically produces two sidebands. Mm-hmm.
That's the information carrier.
The information carrier. And technology has it, and the commercial services we had, international telephone companies, overseas radio telephonies and so on, were using...
Military,
you name it. They were using single sideband, using only one sideband, and this is very obvious, Bob, in the crowded shortwave bands we had, you could gain a lot of space. By a normal AM transmitter, legally, should have about 9 kc kilohertz bandwidth.
4.5 kc or kilohertz of frequency response.
A response, which is not exactly hi-fi, but it's on shortwave.
Adequate. Yeah.
Is adequate for good communication and readability. The funny thing is that what has proven so successful on the commercial side of telecommunication, for unknown reasons, were rejected. Well, I would accept when one government was saying, or one company would say, well, our transmitters are not equipped for single sideband, but those who had the possibility to go single sidebands for, you name it, whatever reason, said no. We don't want the first to penetrate into this territory of single sideband.
In single sideband, you eliminate the carrier, you eliminate one of the sidebands, because they take up huge amounts of power and energy, and you keep the information, the intelligence, as it's called, in only the one single sideband.
Our listeners may be wondering to whom they are listening, but you are listening to the two Bobs. Having run a shortwave program for 24 years, but now...
They wouldn't let us make it 25, Bob.
Getting a little bit older in age, we've become a little bit more philosophers in a certain way, which no doubt has come out of what you've heard so far here. Yeah? And that's, I guess, this is natural.
Bob, we always were. We just, you know, didn't have the reason to say it, or we didn't have
the possibility. We didn't have the airtime.
We weren't brought together to talk about philosophy.
Yeah. Well, that's
I do this on ham radio. I know you do, too.
Yeah.
I've ruffled a few feathers on QRZ.com. I've also had a few things to say. But this is who we are. I was talking to a friend of mine who is a guy who grew up just literally down the road from where I did, Bill, W2ONV. He's a great man of the audio world on 14178.
Exactly.
Now, Bill and I go back a long time, long before the audio, and we were just philosophizing the other day over the holidays about it, and we looked at some of the old radio personalities especially. Actually, Bill and Tony in the UK, in Sherwood Forest, G4EKL, got onto this subject. You know, what is it that made some of these people popular? You know, what qualities did they have? And I recalled a name you might remember, Bob, although he was, for the most part, an American personality, but many, many people of my generation, and certainly older, will remember Arthur Godfrey, who was a radio ham. And this guy was incredible. He played the ukulele, was very laid back, very quiet, very, very relaxed, and he had an incredible following. I think of some of the other personalities. Walter Cronkite, another radio ham. Bill Cullen, another radio ham. And there's a long list. Barry Goldwater, the politician, and others, you know, who could spend time going down the list. All radio hams. But that's not necessarily the point. The point is, we got on musing and philosophizing about what it was, you know, that makes a personality, a public personality, special and creates a following. Going back to Arthur Godfrey, he was once asked in an interview, to what do you ascribe your popularity? And he said, it's very simple. Whatever you do, whoever you are, you can only be one person, and that is yourself. And when you are yourself, whether it's on screen, on the microphone, people feel whether you're genuine or not. You don't even have to be that good. But if you're genuine, you touch the heart and soul of people. Edward R. Murrow, the great wartime Second World War correspondent for CBS, later one of the directors of The Voice of America, and another incredibly charismatic figure in broadcasting, put it this way once. He said, the only thing that counts in broadcasting is what comes out of the loudspeaker. He wasn't talking about technical quality. He was talking about what we call today content, programming. There's nothing else that counts except what people hear and how they hear it, which makes radio the most intimate medium of all. Because people are listening to you. You are touching their heart and soul. We all have a receiver built into us, our heart and soul. And you can tell when somebody's a phony. You can tell when someone is genuine. You can tell from the sound of the voice, from the way people speak, whether they are genuine or not. And unfortunately, people are not themselves anymore, especially radio and television personalities. They're imitating someone, a role model or an idol. And today in this world, even some people in an early stage, children are asked, well, who is your role model? Who do you want to be like? And my answer would be, rhetorically, myself.
Yeah.
That's the only true answer. And that's gone, you know. People are all out of the same mold, produced by the same software. And this is the saddest thing, and this is one of the biggest problems in our world today. We don't know how to be ourselves.
Yeah, so it's fully endorsed what you say on this, Bob. And also, let's put it modestly, or immodestly, the fact that over all these decades, we've been relatively prominent on the shortwave, with our shortwave audiences, I believe. They believed that we really believe in what we are saying, and that we identify ourselves, and they got the feeling, say, well, he believes in it. He seems to be
These guys are genuine.
Yeah, genuine.
And we always were, Bob.
We don't want to imitate anybody else here. We wanted just to be ourselves.
Which is what we always were. We never had a script. You had some notes. When people sent in technical questions for you to answer, you made a few notes. But we went into a studio, Bob. It was a regular ritual. We shook hands. The technician was waiting, whether it was Ottmar Stadelmann or Eddie Kaufmann or some of the other people, Claude Alain Marthe. I could go down the long list. Or whether it was in Sonnen, in the glider. You know, when you were a glider pilot, we did programs recording them in the air.
We started out with demonstrating how relay station worked. It was in the glider, was a handy,
mm-hmm.
and you were on the rooftop of the building there.
Of the radio.
Yeah, we had it. And we had, first of all, we couldn't get a direct contact.
Mm-hmm.
We used a relay on the Mensivilek, you see, yeah. And then I took off eventually, and then we changed from the relay frequency to the simplex direct frequency.
Mm.
Explain to people how it worked and the whole thing and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we always did a little bit something special, didn't we?
A lot of people have asked over the years, are the two Bobs coming back? What is your feeling about that, Bob?
I don't think we will be coming back the way we left the radio. But we are coming back in way of what you are doing right now, Bob, explaining ourselves, what are we doing now. It's for 12 years, I'm retired now. It's the first year now I have given up gliding.
And just as a footnote, you were a telecommunications engineer and specialist, also in high frequency, working for, at the time, the Swiss PTT, Post Telephone and Telegraph yeah. Administration.
That's right. And for 30 years, one of my hobbies, besides amateur radio, was soaring and gliding, you see. But after 30 years, and in addition, I had there were some family reasons. I had to restrict myself a little bit. I had to take care of my wife. And
you had to reset your priorities.
It's a funny thing. You remember the picture with Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca?
Sure.
With the famous title, As Time Goes By.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this very appropriate for my decision to take as time goes by. And I guess everybody has to, sooner or later, make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Quo vadis? In other words,
where are we going?
Where are we going? And having been 75, you wouldn't believe it, 75 in September this year, I thought, look, this is I've seen it for 30 years gliding. It's a wonderful, terrific sport, Bob. And if you are not yet a philosopher, you will become one when you're up there, looking down with all the problems they have down there, the little huts, the little, you know, the ants.
Brings it into perspective.
Exactly. And so I had to take a decision and say, well, I have seen it. It was great. I haven't had any accidents. And
some people you knew were less fortunate there. You lost some friends.
I lost a very, very close friend this year, mm-hmm. or last year rather.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is fate. This is something we cannot choose, Bob. We have to take it the way it comes. But
and you said, "Don't push my luck."
Well, I still health-wise, I still have my ticket valid.
Mm-hmm.
I could.
You're in great shape, Bob.
Well, I couldn't complain. But 75, after all, I mean, we are reaching the last third. Let's put it that way, of our life. Unless I don't think I have any intentions of becoming 150 years old or so on. But that's the way it is. So I still have a house. I have the house to keep in shape. I have a dog. Just as you know, we have to walk the dogs out. I have to do the repair. I still have ham radio. And sometimes I listen to CDs or records we did together. Good old day gone by without living too much in the past.
No, you can't. That's not right to live in the past.
But it's good sometimes to listen to records and say...
It stimulates good memories.
Stimulates memories. Mm. And also, when you see a picture or a slide, you see persons and surroundings which immediately recalls details of that era and
brings you back. And to go back to what you said from a technical point of view, okay, you're not gliding anymore, at least for the moment. You have your ticket, but
I give it up now, Bob.
Yeah, you want to get out of that, but you have the ham radio, and the one thing that would be, you know, a lot of people claim this about whatever they do, but I have heard amateur radio referred to as the king of hobbies and the hobby of kings. Well, the hobby of kings, that doesn't impress me so much, but the king of hobbies. Without wanting to put down anyone's hobby, there are many, many ways to roam, and whatever brings us peace and happiness and contentment, and renewal, regeneration is a wonderful thing. But there is something special about amateur radio in the sense that, you know, for those of us who love to communicate, we have it in the blood. You get on there, you call CQ, or you hear someone calling, you just never know who you're going to hear. You have got so many stories, I'm sure. I've got a lot of stories. I've talked to people from all walks of life. I could make it spicier and more colorful by actually describing and mentioning names and so on. But, I mean, literally, from princes to business magnates, broadcasters, doctors, truck drivers, people from all walks of life. And in amateur radio, especially as we get older, there's always something to do. Because it doesn't depend on the weather. You get on there and it's stimulating, mentally stimulating. In the tradition of the rag chewing, as we call it, people who like to talk on the air, and there are quite a few of them around, when you get on there, you never know who you're going to talk to, and it's always stimulating. And you shut down your rig after a couple of hours and you say, that was really interesting. So the next morning you get up and you can look forward to something else. Of course, we have to have other activities too. Physical activity. I like to hike. I like to get out. Such a beautiful country. And you know, I live in the Emmental, outside the house, the back door. We have all these things that can be done, but so many other things and places to go. And a large amount of this website is devoted to just that kind of thing. So really, life is there. There's so much to do if you do it. And I remember over the years, Bob, you were always someone who did live life, and you still live life. And you never said, well, now is the time to quit or to wind down. You just keep on going.
Well, the batteries are still loaded, let's put it like that. And, of course, as long as we physically and spiritually can keep track, why not? I mean, I have a lot of friends here my age. When it comes speaking about computers, I hear, oh, I don't have to have anything with this body thing. It doesn't interest me. That's too complicated. Why?
That's giving up on life.
He's giving himself up. Okay, I mean, we have a pension towards technical things in life here. That's possibly why we were putting on this computerized business. I think in 87, I built my own computer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was an Apple. And he had about 68 kilo memories. I was proud as a kid. Today, well, if I didn't have any hard disk there, I had two floppy drives. But it worked.
Uh-huh.
And coming into the field of the technicalities today, I must tell you exactly, I wouldn't care touching the inneries of computers today, because it's so jam-packed and technology-wise. First of all, I would have lost a little bit track of the latest technology and that sort of thing. I also wouldn't... I don't think I would have enough guts to touch the inneries of a complicated receivers over there.
No, you have to be a brain surgeon for that.
And in addition, if you're not in touch with the technology by daily use, you lose track of these things here,
mm-hmm.
the schematics and everything. And then,
years ago, you could put both hands in a transmitter or receiver.
You could take your soldering iron and replace the resistor.
Now it's all micro circuitry.
Yeah, and the surface.
It's not our fault.
Surface mounting devices. I mean, if you go in there with your soldering iron, Bob, you can throw away the whole thing into the trash can there.
Yeah.
It's been so specialized, and it does not even. Even if you go to a specialist here, say, could you repair my digital receivers? No way. Buy a new one. It's cheaper. That's a little bit the attitude today. We've become consumers in a way.
Yeah.
And throwaway
yeah.
people in a way. It doesn't pay having something repaired because it costs you more than buying a new one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
sadly.
Sadly.
Bob, it's been a lot of fun to sit here, as we have done so many times in the past, making our recordings here. And we hope that with this recording, we've been able to bring some pleasure, entertainment, and also some information to those who so often ask, whatever happened to the two Bobs?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we left our marks, no doubt about that. Still, after 10 years of having closed down the program, we still have hams on the air saying, we know you. And the two Bobs is something which resounds somewhere in our memories.
Well, Bob, to that I raise my glass, as we have done many times over those 24 years. I wish you all the best.
Same to you, Bob. Three cheers.
Cheers. And it was a wonderful pleasure to sit here and make this inaugural recording for this website. This is the very first recording that I've undertaken for the new website.
I look forward, really, to see what the echo may be.
Well, me too. This is symbolic for me, and it's good to get together with a good friend like you and to be able to chat and philosophize, as we've done so often, without a microphone, but to slip in a microphone here for the benefit of others. Once again, Bob, cheers to you.
Cheers, Bob.
All the best.
All the best.
Cheers.
In 2004 and the coming future.
Yes. And let us now, or Bob, you sign off the program in the way we always did.
Until we meet again, this is your truly Bob Tomlin and
Bob Zanotti
saying goodbye.
Good day, excellent.
And very best of 73s.